You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony? You're a helpful snowman.
Hey, listeners. Welcome to another event. Another audiological event that we're having here in your eyes, your ears, in your personal space. I'm your host, Pete, as always. I was just going to talk today about... I did another famous Pete Walks Out of the Movies like a week ago, 2 weeks ago. Went to the movies. Now, I have a minor history of this. I wouldn't say I've walked out of, like, a lot of movies. You know, of the movies I've been to, how many have I walked out of? Like, four? I think four. Okay, there was famously... Do you like how I'm like, famously? Like, as if, you know... Oh, yes, we all know about the great scandal in high school when Pete walked out of Freddy Got Fingered, somewhat against his will. We went to... This was a movie that, like, we went to in mixed company. And by that, I don't necessarily mean, well, there was men and women there, and therefore we couldn't watch the movie. What I mean is, like, there were people who think Tom Green fucking a moose that's dead on the side of a road for, like, 10 minutes is funny, and people who do not think that is funny. And that was the mixture of company I was in. And you know what sucked about it? So, you know, I remember going, and this was, you know, in high school, so it's not like I had a lot of cash. But, you know, I went because, like, a girl I liked was going. So you're like, well, okay, I'm going. I can't tell if this is, like, a turn lane or if they're like, you can't use this turn lane. Anyway, do you like these driving ones, how once in a while I just break in with, like, I'm an old man and don't know how to drive? So, I went because there was a girl I liked who was going. And, you know, the company I went with was, like, some guy that I knew from school, a couple foreign exchange students, a couple other friends. You know, it was, like, a real mixed group of, like, friends and acquaintances and people I didn't know that well and all this shit. So we go to the movie and, you know, I can't remember exactly. I think it was, if I'm remembering this correctly, for some reason in this movie... Tom Green is involved in the birth of a baby, and he's in the delivery room, which is what I call the front area of my apartment, because that's where pizza gets delivered. And he delivers a baby or catches the baby. I don't know what you call it exactly when you do that part, but he does that. And then for some reason, at some point, he's holding the umbilical cord and swinging the baby around it like a hammer thrower in the fucking Olympics. Now, I mean, I guess it didn't, I wouldn't say this bothered me. I don't think I was having, like, a laugh riot at Freddy Got Fingered. But it didn't bother me, you know, I guess, watching a baby be swung around by its umbilical cord. I mean, because it's, you know, it's not fucking real. Obviously, I'm not actually seeing, obviously, it's not an actual baby. I mean, you know, it would be amazing is to find out low on these, you know, 15 years later or something. It's like, Tom Green's Freddy Got Fingered was 100% real. They're just like, this is, we just followed him and this is what happened. I don't know how much people remember about Tom Green, like original Tom Green's show. But it was kind of great. Because I think basically he was like out to ruin things that other people took very seriously. And that's kind of what worked. Like, my two favorite things that I specifically remember are, one was that he, like, used to, he made a song, like, a really stupid song. I mean, you might call it a parody song, but it wasn't even a parody song, you know? It was, like, when I think of parody song, I think of Weird Al, and this was sub Weird Al level song. And he did it to be on Total Request Live, TRL, you know, and they would, like, count down the top however many. I think it was, like, top 10 or top 20 videos, and it took, like, 5 hours. And then, you know what was the worst part about fucking TRL? They would count down, let's call it 10 songs in 2 hours. So they've got 120 minutes. So in theory, you've got, like, 12 minutes per song. Let's cut out the commercial time. So call that, like, a third, maybe? So then you've got, 80 minutes for 10 songs. So you've got 8 minutes per song. You could even then cut out, you know, okay, let's say it's half and half talking in the studio and songs. You'd still have 4 minutes per song. The way Total Request Live managed itself was it had the list. It didn't even play the entire song most of the time. They would, like, cut it off at, 2.5 minutes because it's just like, listen, this song is 3 minutes and 15 seconds. The only songs I think they could play all of was, like, Weezer songs from the Green Album because they were, like, a tight 2:15 at times. It was unbelievable. So anyway, I mean, the whole thing was a joke. And then Tom Green made this dumb fucking song and then was, like, the top thing on Total Request Live because I think he basically, you know, he got people to vote for his song. I don't even know how you voted. You probably called a phone number and paid, like, $18. And he got to be the top song on this, I think purely because he had a voting block of people who were like, fuck TRL. Like, I wanna see this crumble, or not even crumble. It's not quite watching the world burn. Maybe it was. It's a little more to me of like, let's expose this for how stupid it is, and how, like, when we talk about a matter of taste, and then we throw in this voting because then it's like it's official. It's like, that doesn't mean shit. Just because a bunch of people like this song does not mean it's a good song. Or just because a bunch of people would vote for this song, more to the point, doesn't mean it's a good song. So I liked that he did that. I also, he would fuck with this, you know, his quote-unquote friend. Like, this was kind of jackass stuff, except he didn't really, like, hurt his friend physically. He just did things like, for example, so his friend Glenn Humplick, who I'm, like, never sure. I'm like, is he, like, a legit straight man, or is he just, like, playing a part, you know? Is Glenn Humplick, he reminded me of my old landlord, and I'm like, maybe Glenn Humplick is just, like, somebody's landlord somewhere, and he was Tom Green's friend, and now he's, like, I fucking hate that guy. Or is he, like, is he a brilliant comedy producer, you know, who's, like, out there now working on comedy stuff, because they're, like, that was genius what you did, man. And so one thing I remember he did to fuck with him was, like, he, Tom Green, so Glenn wasn't coming on the show for a little while because he was pissed off about whatever Tom Green's latest shitty thing he had done. And so then Glenn stopped coming on the show for a while. Like, he's like, well, Glenn's not here again this week. Glenn's not here this week. And so what he was decided to do to encourage Glenn to come was he had his entire phone number in the, you know, studio they were filming from. And he's like, every week that Glenn doesn't come, I'm going to turn over, you know, all the letters were like those fucking Wheel of Fortune letters where, you know, you had to turn them so you could see what the numbers were. So he's like, every week that Glenn doesn't come, I'm going to turn one of these things and reveal another number in his phone number. Right? So if he doesn't come for, you know, what is it, 10 weeks in a row, 9, whatever? I guess it's 10. I guess we could probably figure that out if we do a little investigation, Pete. If he doesn't come for, you know, enough weeks in a row, every week I'm going to reveal a number, and then you'll have Glenn's entire phone number. And so he does this, you know, and he reveals it, and you're like, oh, this is really funny. And so he does this for, like, a week and then comes back. And the next week, you're, like, waiting for him to reveal the other number. And he's like, so we may have made a mistake because, you know, I had the numbers. They were turned away from the camera, and I was going to reveal them one at a time. But the entire, you know, the window outside this office faces Times Square in New York. So everyone could see this number, the entire number, the entire time. So, you know, Glenn got... just his fucking phone got blown up big time. So anyway, these were the kinds of things that Tom Green was doing. So, you know, he made a movie, and I think it was, like, probably more outrageous gross-out stuff, which he did sometimes, than it was just, like, funny pranky stuff. But there you go. So we're in this movie theater, a baby's being swung around, and half the people I'm with walk out, like, right then. And I sit around a little more, and one of the people who stayed was, you know, this other guy we were with, Chris, and then the other one was foreign exchange student Johannes from Germany, who had a fucking dark sense of humor. To give you an example, he was nearly killed while he was here because he was with his host brother. They were driving in the mountains in his host brother's Jeep. His host brother fell asleep at the wheel and went off the road and crashed into a tree. And it was fucked up, man. Like, and, you know, of course the guy driving was fine. He was, like, one of those guys who you're like, you have all these, like, horrible things that, calamities that befall you that are sometimes kind of your fault, but never really seems to be all that worse for the wear, ultimately. Meanwhile, is a German foreign exchange student friend is, like, in the hospital for weeks, right? And, you know, we went and visited him in the hospital, and so he's, like, telling us, he had this very deadpan, weird sense of humor, and he starts telling us, like, how, so he hit a tree, this kid, and it was like, I don't know, the seatbelt or something crunched into this German kid's guts, and he had to have, I think, part of his intestine removed or something like that, like, something pretty fucked up, and so, and pretty serious. And so we're in the hospital, and we're talking to this German kid, and first he's telling us how his host brother hit this tree, right? And it was in, like, a national park or something, or a national forest. And so if the tree lived, you know, it was like a $20 traffic violation. If the tree died, it was like a $1,000 traffic violation. Now, whether or not this German kid died did not come into play for the cost of the, like, you know, ticket or whatever, the severity of the offense. But if a tree died, listen, I love trees and don't like people, but even I feel like that's a bit of a fuck you. I mean, if he hit the tree and everyone was fine, they should be like, well, yeah, we might fine you for destroying this tree. And at the same time, though, you're like, I mean, he totaled his car. He wasn't drunk. Let's calm down. I don't know. There's, like, a human life in the balance here, and they're like, oh, we better go check up on that tree. Make sure it's still alive. And, you know, I was like, well, what are they going to do? Monitor it for, like, 5 fucking years? I don't know how long it takes a tree to, like, officially die, but it seems like forever. It seems like I see trees all the time where someone is like, oh, that tree's dead. You can tell from the limbs or whatever that it's dead. I need to get it cut down. I think people just want to cut down trees in their yard. I think they're just like, I don't like having this tree. I don't like raking fucking leaves. I don't like the branches come down and they fucking cut the power one time. I don't like it. I want to get rid of these trees. And so they get rid of their trees. And, you know, they tell themselves it's fine. Because it's like, you know, how we're like, oh, your lobsters can't feel it when you boil them alive. And you're like, I don't know, man. I don't know what a lobster can and can't feel. I suspect it feels something when it's being boiled alive. That's just a hunch. Don't call it a hunchback. That's my tagline for the Hunchback of Notre Dame 2. And yes, I know. But mine is the Hunchback of Notre Dame. He's a football player. It's kind of a crossover. It's like if you combined Rudy with the Hunchback, you could do that. So anyway, we're in the hospital with this kid, and he's telling us this thing about the tree, and we're like, that's fucked up. And then he's talking about how he has a catheter. And he's like, yeah, I have a catheter in right now. And we're like, what's that like? And he's like, it hurts. It's horrible. Then he's like, it really hurts when I get a boner. And then one of the guys with us had a attractive sister. And so, you know, he was made fun of in this way that, like, young boys used to make fun of someone who had an attractive sister or mom. Which really wasn't, like, about the attractiveness of their mom or sister. It was about, like, man, this guy gets really mad when you say his sister is good-looking. Like, you couldn't even say, like, you know what, this guy's sister is a good-looking lady. He would be like, what the fuck? Shut up, that's my fucking sister, you bastard. And you're like, okay, well, she's ugly. What do you want me to say? I don't know. I guess I don't have to say anything, but I feel forced because you feel so passionate about it. You know how you'll prod at your friends sometimes because you're like, I know if I bring this topic up, it's just going to light them on fire. Devil's advocating a little bit. That was definitely what was going on with the sister. So this guy's saying he's got this catheter, and he's like, it really hurts when I get a boner. And he's like, so when his sister was here earlier, that hurt big time. And, you know, this is like, he's like half awake. He's on pain meds, you know, he's like barely conscious. And he's still joking about the painful boner that our friend's sister gave him. So he's got, you know, a sense of humor for sure. But maybe one that's not totally aligned with the sensibilities of, you know, the large population. So he's makes this joke, whatever. So he's at the movie with us, and he is laughing his ass off. Like, I don't know if he ever saw anything that was more entertaining to him than this movie. And so, you know, half the people leave. A couple people stay. I go out to see what's going on because I was like, is this just a mass exodus for, like, a good reason? Or are we leaving the movie? You know, we'd all, like, driven there together, so it's not like two people could just leave and everything. We're in fucking high school. So I go out. Everyone's standing around. They're like, this movie's gross, man. We gotta go. Oh, and the girl I liked was there with her boyfriend. Now, this is a complicated situation. But, There was no cheating involved or anything like that. Maybe emotional cheating, if that's a thing that's possible in high school, or possible to avoid. But anyway, it was the girl I liked, and her boyfriend was there, and her boyfriend was like, yeah, man, this is really sick. We gotta leave. And so then I was like, oh, man. And the girl was like, obviously not happy about it, and the guy was like, not happy about it, and I was like, this doesn't bother me as much. Maybe, now what am I going to do? Because it's like, well, I can't just be like, fuck you guys, we're staying. Because I'm like, no, I like this girl. And, you know, I was like, well, now, you know, there's a bar being set here, which is like, well, her boyfriend is like, no, we're leaving. And I'm like, ugh, what am I going to do? Fight with them about it? I don't know. So anyway, I got to go back in. Now, somehow, this is the part that I didn't really care for. Somehow, Peter ends up being the guy who has to go back into the theater and be like, we're leaving. You know, even though I was like, I don't know, I'm in the middle. Like, I wasn't loving it. I wasn't thinking it was a comedic gold. And, you know, I don't really want to stay if no one else wants to stay or a large contingent doesn't want to stay. But I also was definitely not, you know, I wouldn't have left the theater. Let's put it that way. If it was up to me, I would not have left the theater and whatever. So I have to go back in the movie, and in a, you know, quiet movie theater, explain, you know, hey, we gotta go. And this German kid is laughing his fucking ass off, and he's like, why? You know, he is completely baffled by this turn of events, you know, because he's just thinking, like, this is amazing, and we're in a movie, why would we leave? And I have to be like, I don't know, everybody else wants to leave, they're not liking it. It's too gross. And he's like, well, I don't think it's gross. And I was like, I really don't either. But, you know, what are we going to do? We're outvoted. So anyway, that's how that night panned out. So that's like one movie leaving, which was like not... You know what? I take a lot of bad credit for things when I did something bad, I think. Or, you know, I try to, when I look in the past, I'm like, that was a real dick move, or that was stupid. But I'm not taking the credit for that one. I think I would have stayed. I might not have liked it. It would probably be forgettable if I'd stayed, but I didn't stay. So I may have, you know, violated the rules about, you know, I left because a girl, but then at the same time, I'm like, I made, like, 60% of my decisions based on, like, what would a guy who girls like do in this situation? So I wouldn't say it was unusual for me. So that was one. The next one I remember leaving specifically was Miami Vice, the remake of Miami Vice. I don't know if people remember this. Like, this was in a time when, you know, as they are still now, fucking let's just remake every movie. Oh my God. I listened to this. There's a podcast called The Jeff Rubin Show. And he brings in a friend of his every summer, and they kind of do their, like, summer movie review. And they did one this summer, but what they also did was traveled back to the summers of, like, 1996 and 1993 and, like, you know, 20-some years ago. It was crazy how many huge movies came out, like, every week in the... Like, one summer would be jammed with 12 movies that you're like, oh my God, that's a classic. Oh, everyone's seen that. You know what I mean? Like, The Rock and Independence Day came out at the same time. And I'm not saying these are, like, great cinema, but you're just like, holy shit. If you look at the summer when Jurassic Park came out, it was unbelievable how many summery, blockbustery movies came out, right? So when Miami Vice happened in the time when I was like, I think they were doing some of these remakes, but they were still remaking shit that you're like, yeah, I mean, I have no connection to this as someone who's, like, 19. You know, Miami Vice was way before my time. This movie came out, I don't know, probably at the early beginnings of when the 80s became a little cool again, which I always associate with the release of Grand Theft Auto Vice City, because it had that 80s soundtrack and everyone seemed to enjoy it. So it was probably close to the time of the beginning of the 80s nostalgia, but, you know, they released this movie that I was like, I don't know what I expected it to be. I guess I thought it was going to be like cops fucking busting people. And it's sort of like the first 5 minutes was, you know, they rush into a building like SWAT team style, right? And bust somebody doing something. Or they're in, like, it may have been one of these, like, hey, you know, we need to be a nightclub scene. Why does every movie, like, every fucking crime movie, every mystery, it's like, we need a scene where they go get a perp in a nightclub. There's always a nightclub. And, you know, there's loud music and everyone's dancing. And it always seems like, you know, even, I think one of the Batmans, this happens. And it seems like, for some reason, Batman can just show up in a nightclub and people are just dancing and not really noticing that Batman's there. Which seems crazy. Because I'm like, people fucking notice because Snooki's at a nightclub. Because they paid her to come there and, like, drink some weird raspberry-flavored champagne or something for 20 minutes and then she leaves. People notice that. They don't notice fucking Batman is there. They're not like, oh, this guy's in a Batman outfit. You know, The Matrix. In The Matrix, he's got to meet up with somebody at a nightclub. Why? They could have met anywhere. They're not like, eh, let's just meet at fucking Subway. That's like a block away from my house. You know, if The Matrix was real, I'd be like, let's meet at Subway. Because that seems like the most innocuous, we're going out to have a sandwich lunch that neither of us really enjoy, place in the world. I mean, I can't think of a place that's going to be more, that's going to be less suspicious than we're meeting at Subway. I feel like even the programs in The Matrix would be like, oh my God, look at this. If I programmed The Matrix and the world looked like it did, and there were this many Subways, I'd be like, that is an interesting, I don't know if I'd call it a bug, but it seems like a bug in the programming. Like, Subway and the proliferation of Subway really is what has me thinking that The Matrix might be, like, fucking real. Because what other explanation is there for so many Subways and the food is just so, like, you know, plain? I mean, what's the better? Is that the worst explanation? Maybe that's a better way to ask this question. Is that a worse explanation than, while we're in The Matrix? This is, I guess, where I'm at. I find it more likely that people are in the Matrix than people like Subway in general. Anyway, so they're in a nightclub, whatever. So then the rest of the movie, there's no, like, 1980s-ness. It's to be in the time when it was released, you know, present day or whatever. It's Colin Farrell doing his level best to do an American accent, which was horrible. Like, I am not very hard on actors or accents or things because I don't really notice that much. And I noticed. I was like, Jesus Christ, just let him talk in his normal fucking voice. Who cares? Yeah, his parents, just throw in a line about his parents are from somewhere. It's the melting pot. Give me a break. You know, I bought Arnold Schwarzenegger as like a, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger is the fucking governor of California. Okay? If he can be the governor of California and he sounds like that, I think it's totally plausible that someone with an Irish accent would be a police officer in the United States. That seems like a lesser version of the same thing. So there you go. Anyway, here's what I remember of the rest of the movie that I saw. There was like multiple times that I saw Jamie Foxx's butt, and yet there was like no female nudity. Somehow they managed to have male nudity and no female nudity, which I was like, man, let's, you know, how about some parody here, people? I'm all for equality. If I see Jamie Foxx's butt, then I want to see a lady's butt. You know, that's who I am. And it just felt like it was weird. Like, you see this action scene, then they're in a shower together, and it's like Jamie Foxx's butt all over the place, and you're like, okay. I don't know any of these characters yet, except that, you know, he's got a butt. And then I just feel like the rest of the movie was like Colin Farrell and this lady, and they're in a boat, and they're just like trying to outcool each other. And it was like, hey, you want to go have mojitos? And it was like, sure, you know a place? And it's like, oh yeah, I know a place. And they drive a boat from Florida to Cuba to go have mojitos because it's like, oh, that's dangerous and cool. And you're like, really? If I got on a boat and someone's like, you want to go have mojitos? I know a good place. And they're like, all right, Cuba. I don't know how long it takes to get from Florida to Cuba on a boat, but I feel like it's long enough that I'd say, I mean, even if we're going to have an A++++ mojito, I would rather have a B- mojito that was like 10 minutes away. You know, oh, but it's cool and sexy because we're going to Cuba. Okay, that seems reasonable. And that was all I really remember. And then, you know, I turned to my friend and I was like, do you want to fucking get the fuck out of here? And he was like, he was definitely not as ready to leave. But he also was not like, no, I want to see how this turns out. Because that was the thing. When you leave a movie, part of the key of leaving a movie, according to my apparent rules, is when you're like, I don't know if there's anything to turn out away, or if I know I don't care. Those are the ways that you know it's like, hey, you can decide when the end of the movie is. People have led you to believe that you go, you sit there until the end, and then, you know, whatever. I disagree. I think you go, and then if you're like, I don't really care about anything that happens here, I'm not interested to see anything. I don't think anyone's going to shoot somebody with a rocket launcher and just blow them apart. So I think it's time to go. So we left that one. I did another walkout, and we went on a double date to the movies. We went to Get Smart. And there were issues involved with that, too, that I don't fully remember, but were not my issues. But anyway, I was there with my girlfriend, and we watched this movie, and like, it seemed like they had what I thought was the climactic battle, and then apparently wasn't. And I was just like, Jesus fucking Christ, you know, it's been like 100 minutes into this movie. They had like a big rooftop battle, everything was on fire, as I remember. You know, there was a physical confrontation. And then you're like, and then the movie kind of like steps back and is like, okay, now what are we going to do? Like, it was almost like if you saw a ghost movie, you know how in the ghost movie it goes like this. They have a ghost attack, then it's boring for a while. Then, you know, the ghost starts coming back into it. Then they go do the library research, and then they go fight the ghost, and then it's the end. It would be like if they did that, except they took the library research scene out, put it after the ghost confrontation, and then I guess there was going to be a second ghost confrontation that was even longer and more important, but it was just like... It was just scene after scene in this movie of things that I didn't understand why it was happening, other than they were like, well, Anne Hathaway has to sort of fall in love with Steve Carell. And you're like, why? Why in a movie where a guy, you know, based on a show where a guy had a shoe phone, which, like, I never thought, I always thought, like, that's not the worst idea in the world. But the other day, I was, like, standing at a urinal in a bathroom and looked at the floor, and you could just see how pea-speckled it was. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that's why. You know, the general dirt and stuff doesn't bother me. But, like, when you're looking down and you're just like, that's not a puddle of pea. But it's not as far from being a puddle of pea as I would prefer if we're talking about standing in it and then putting my shoe on my face. So we're talking about a movie based on a show with this sort of thing in it. And, you know, it's like, we need to have this love story. And you're like, I don't think you do. I don't think we need to have a love story. Or does that need to be the love story? I mean, is Steve Carell and Anne Hathaway a believable couple to me? Not really. And maybe they weren't a couple, because I didn't see the fucking end of the movie. So we got up and left after the first conflict, you know, was over, before the ghost research sequence. Because when that started happening, I remember being like, what? This is still happening? What's going on? And just, you know, we were both kind of like, you want to get the fuck out of here? And it was like, sure. And the other couple stayed, and we left. But that was the last time I think I walked out of a movie in a long time. I mean, that's probably been 5 years at least. So, and here's the other thing, though, I think that does make my walking out a little weird is I don't see, like, a ton of movies. And a lot of the movies I do end up seeing are because I'm like, it's a Tuesday and I have Tuesday off. I'm going to go to Barnes & Noble for a little while, read some comics. Then I'm going to go have, like, 3 drinks and eat dinner and then walk over to the movie theater, right? Because you're just like, whatever. So that's how you end up seeing, like, The Escape Plan with Stallone and Schwarzenegger. And when you go to that, like, you don't end up really walking out of that because I don't know that there's a lot that could happen that you'd be like, well, that's not what I came here for. You know what I mean? I guess if it turned, you know, I'm trying to think of how that movie could have turned to be like, no, this is not okay. Maybe if I had really strong opinions about the prison system or something. I just realized, I think that they had these masks in there that might have been ripped off by this comic book bitch planet, but now I'm not so sure. Anyway, so we just walked out of this movie, Sausage Party. Is that what it's called? Sausage Fest? I think it was Sausage Party. I don't know why it was called Sausage Party as opposed to Sausage Fest. I think we all know Sausage Fest is the term as opposed to Sausage Party, don't we? But also, they were hot dogs, not sausages. I know to some that may seem like a pointless distinction, and I'm sure that, like, sausage is probably the umbrella term under which hot dog falls, right? Like, a hot dog is a type of a sausage. But it was hot dogs. There was no sausages. But they could have made them sausages, by the way. So, I was like, you know what? I want to see a movie. I haven't seen one in a while. I wanted to see a comedy because I feel like it's been a long time since I saw a good comedy. But, you know, by the time I went to the theater... So, these Tuesdays, these drunken movie Tuesdays happen once a month because I, you know, get off. I work a weekend a month and then I have drunken movie Tuesday. But... The last times I went, there was, like, one time I went and Ghostbusters was not at a time that worked. You know, it wasn't playing very late because it was the end of the summer. And then it was gone. So I saw Suicide Squad instead, which was, you know, fine. Whatever. So I was excited to see this comedy, right? And I saw some articles. I saw the most ridiculous article about it online, too, about this sausage party. So it was someone writing and, you know, like... I know that it can be frustrating to hear this because I think most times it's probably not true. But I really think this person was, like, trying to find something wrong with the movie to hate. You know, because they were kind of, like, taking a real shotgun approach, just, like, scattershot, maybe this, maybe that, pick this up, put it down, whatever. And we finally ended up, you know, so, like, one thing they talked about was, like, well, there were characters, you know, like the Grits, which was voiced by Daryl from The Office, you know, was talking about the Crackers, how the Crackers had, you know, taken up their space on the store shelves. So this is a movie, by the way, about, like, a bunch of animated... It's Toy Story, except instead of toys, they're all foods in the supermarket. That's all you need to know. And so, you know, there's, like, a fire water. It's, like, some kind of booze drink, and it's, like, a Native American dude. And he's talking about how the Crackers moved in and took up all the shelf space. And, you know, ha ha ha, and then the Grits are, like, talking about those Crackers. And so this article was like, well, that was a very, like, racist portrayal and da-da-da-da. And I was like, I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like it's a stretch, but fine. I didn't actually know that Grits were, like, a black people food as opposed to a southern food. I don't know how much southern food is not created by black people, but anyway... I don't know. It seemed to be mentioning race, but it seemed to be... The joke to me seemed to be like, Crackers are ruining everything because they move in and take over. And I was like, that seems to be a joke against my people. But I don't know. I could be wrong. But anyway, that wasn't the one that I was like, this seems like a stretch. That was one of many. And the ultimate, like, thing that this article came to was about how, you know, so part of this movie is like... All these foods think they're going to the, you know, the whatever, heaven, basically. When they get bought, they go to heaven. And it turns out they're being eaten, and then they're horrified, right? And so what this article was saying is, like, you know, what the makers of this movie didn't realize, they're making all these, like, clever social satire and stuff like that, but what they didn't realize was, like, some foods really are alive before they're consumed. Like, the horror that we're seeing on these hot dogs, they'd already been killed once. You know, they did come from living animals that don't know what's happening, and then they get killed. Which I'm like, I guess that's a valid point, except for the fact that this is a computer-animated movie. So, I'm gonna have to disagree with you on a factual basis, which is, A, none of these things that are alive in this movie are alive. You know, hot dogs are not alive. The things they came from were, but hot dogs are not. But B, they were never alive because they're computer animated. I mean, it's a little bit like, you know, the fox and the hound, and you're like, I can't believe they killed this fox in the beginning of this movie, and you're like, that's really irresponsible, and you're sort of like, that fox never existed in real... I mean, they stopped animating that character... And that was it. It just felt like reaching to me. Because basically the complaint seemed to be like, they're making a lot of social commentary, but they're neglecting to make, you know, commentary about the, I don't know, beef industry or something. And you're like, well, I guess so, but I don't know. Does every movie have to do everything? And it didn't seem, well, okay, the movie sucked balls. I mean, I walked out, spoiler alert, because... that's what I'm talking about. So I don't think it's like a golden missed opportunity here. I guess it wouldn't have, I couldn't say it would ruin the movie to add that in, to be like, can we somehow slip in a point about how meat is alive? But at the same time, I'm like, I don't think it would enhance the movie, nor do I think it would really do a lot for the, like, movement of not eating animals, because it just, I mean, it wasn't a good movie, so who cares? Like, if the shittiest movie in the world makes that point in a really shitty way, I'm not going to be like, you know what? That's converted me. That's changed me over. I don't know. It seemed like a dumb article trying to make a dumb point. And I just felt like after reading it, like, all right, you know what? This is probably a fun movie that is pretty much just fun, and that's it. So we go, and in the preview, you know, you see they're in the store, they think everything's great, then they go home and they're all being eaten and it's horrifying. And so you go to the movie and you're, like, waiting for this to happen, right? And it was just, So stupid. Like, nothing. It took forever. Like, we left before they even got to the house they were going to. And, like, there was one good scene, which was kind of like a parody of Saving Private Ryan, because this lady's shopping cart crashes. She has a douche, and, you know, it explodes, so this powder goes everywhere, so it's kind of, like, dusty, whatever, foggy, like, you know, when they're storming the beach in that movie, and everyone's, you know, insides are coming out and all this shit. So that was fun. That was okay. But the rest of it was kind of stupid. You know, and it's like, oh, and they have a douche, and the douche acts like a douche, and whatever. It just, it wasn't that it was, like, offensive, it just, I didn't think it was, like, super hilarious. So, we got probably, like, an hour in. They still haven't gone to the house where they're all going to be eaten, you know, and you know that's what's happening, because you've seen the preview, and you're like, well, we know what's happening. We know how this works in the movie world. Like, it would have been a great reveal, I think, if they'd gone to the house, and you as the viewer were like, how is this going to be handled? You know what I mean? Do they just, like, feel blissful when they're being eaten and stuff like that? But anyway, it was terrible, and we left. And then we went home and watched Escape from L.A., which I say is a great movie, and Poon Master Flex did not enjoy at all. But, you know what? It was a good experience, and I'll tell you why. There are times in my life, as I'm sure there are times in everyone's life, where you share something that you really enjoy with someone else, and they don't enjoy it, and you kind of start to get, like, defensive, because you're like, hey, why are you being so hard on this and stuff? And, like, Poon Master Flex did not enjoy it at all. She did not enjoy Snake Plissken. She was, like, mocking me openly. She was like, is this what you watched when you were, like, a little kid and then you would go home and pretend to be Snake Plissken? Like, you'd run around and be like, I'm like that guy, Snake. You know, and I was like, well, no, I think this came out when I was, like, 14. So, did I still have action figures? Maybe. Did I run around pretending to be Snake Plissken with an eye patch on? No. But, you know, she was, and she's like, that movie was really stupid. And I was like, I totally agree, and I love it. Not ironically, either. This is a thing. I think a lot of people think that I enjoy things ironically. And it's not, the movies that are bad, I'm not enjoying them because I'm like, oh, I'm not actually enjoying this. I'm engaging in an intellectual exercise about, you know, what is enjoyment, if you think about it? That is not what's happening. What is happening is, like, I just get a sense of pleasure from, like, when you watch A Fateful Findings. It's so unexpected. I mean, and it's unexpected because there's no boundary in that movie. You're like, is this a movie about magic? Is this a love story? Is this, like, an alien movie? Is this guy some kind of creature? Is he doing a magic illusion? Or is he actually magic? Is he a computer hacker? Is he a great author? The answer to everything is yes. Every answer to those questions is yes. And, you know, so unnecessary. So much stuff packed in. So anyway, it's like when you see a weird, shitty movie like that, it's a look into someone's brain. Like, you're seeing the inside of someone's head. And I like that. And I like the unusualness of it. You know, I was talking to some people on the forum on Lit Reactor, and we were talking about story structure. Like, a lot of times, one of the dirty secrets of writing is a lot of times we talk about tropes and things in writing in terms of movies. And this is something that, like, kind of bothered me sometimes, but I saw author Connie Willis talk one time. And she was talking about, she's like, first she was like, I call the, you know, protagonist, I say hero, because it's shorter, it's easier, and whatever. And she's like, and, you know, when I say hero, it can be a man, it can be a woman, whatever. Like, it's the main character in your story, I call the hero. And then she also was like, you know, so she's very into economy, because she has a lot to say, and she usually has, like, an hour to say it, and, man, she fucking fills the hour. But the other thing she was saying was that, like, you know, when I talk about books, I talk about them in terms of movies a lot. The reason being, there are so many books and so many tastes, the chances that all of us in the room are familiar with a book are way lower than all of us being familiar with a movie. You know, when I talk about plot structure and I use, like, Star Wars, right? most people are going to be familiar with that. So that makes it easier to talk about these things. So we were talking about some plot structure-y things on this forum, but the problem was, like, what we were talking about is an outcomes-based ending versus a non-outcomes-based ending. So an outcome-based ending is like an M. Night Shyamalan, right? Where you're like, well, there's a lot of, like, what's going to happen? I don't know, you know? And then the other kind of ending is one where you may already know the ending, or there's really not a lot of options. You know, it's like when you're watching a romantic comedy. You know, will they, won't they is the classic thing. But that's like a closed-ended question. It's not like, will they, won't they, and you're like, well, and then also an alien came. Or, you know, then the ending was like, did they or didn't they? And then you're like, they sort of did and sort of didn't. You know, it's pretty closed-ended. And the question it's asking is not like a huge question. It's a small whatever question. And you kind of know the options. And especially when you're talking about like a rom-com, I mean, you kind of know what the outcome's going to be. There's not a lot of surprises. But we started confusing predictability with outcomes-based. So in other words, it's like, well, if a movie was like predictable, people were saying like, well, that's an outcomes-based movie because, you know the outcome already or whatever. And I was like, I don't think that those things are necessarily true. Like, here's my example of a movie or a story where the outcome doesn't happen. One time I was online talking to Tom, and he was helping me with a story. And he was saying, like, I think that you should tell the reader what's happening, you know, even before your character knows it. Because you're telling this in the past tense using something he calls the redemptive voice. So what you're saying is, like, here's what happened. And, you know, and then I'm going to tell you the details. And the example he gave me is he's like, let's say one time when we were Skyping together, you know, my Christmas tree burned down in the background, you know, and I didn't know what was happening. It was in the other room. He's like, when I told that story to someone else, what I would probably say is like, did I ever tell you about the time my Christmas tree burned down? And he's like, and then you would tell the story. And, you know, some people would tell you, like, that's a crazy way to tell a story because then it blows the ending. But he's saying, no, it doesn't, because it's actually better. And here's why. When you tell the story that way, you know, they know the Christmas tree burned down. And that is a story where you know the outcome as a listener / reader, right? I'm like, the outcome is the tree burned down. Also, I know this guy's not dead. I'm assuming this author's not being a dick and then being like, and that's how I was horribly scarred for life, right? And I just didn't know that because I'm a reader as opposed to seeing the person in the flesh, the charred flesh. So the good thing is when you tell the person, this is the story of the time my tree burned down, they know the tree is burning. And so then you start telling the story and you're like, so I'm on Skype and I start smelling this like kind of pleasant, piney smell. And I was just like, oh man, the winter's great, you know. And then the smell started to become more like abrasive and it hurt my nose. And I was like, man, this is a really intense winter, you know. And I was wondering, you know, the smell was off and on, right? Then it got, like, really intense, and there was smoke. And I was like, what the fuck is going on, you know? So I had to put him on hold on Skype, and I went and, like, looked in the oven. I was like, did I leave the broiler on? I, like, was checking all the looking outside to see if someone was burning leaves or something. And then I felt, like, I know it's crazy that I didn't realize the Christmas tree was burning down. But, you know, I even felt like it was getting really warm. And I was like, man, you're really freaking out about this. But it wasn't so much that I was freaking out, even though I should have. You know, you keep going. And the beauty of the person knowing the tree's burning down is they're reveling in all these details as you go along with you. They're not like, but what's happening? But what's happening? Because if they're wondering what's happening, they're skipping over all the details, right? But if they know what's happening, they can enjoy the details and they can kind of enjoy what the story is about in this case, which is like, this really unusual thing happened that I was totally ill-prepared to deal with and didn't even really think about happening, right? And so that to me is a story that's not necessarily predictable. But also, it's not all based on the outcome. It's not all like, well, if this happens, then the story's great or not great. And so, I bring all this up to talk about just, like, I think movies are, like, super, super predictable. Most movies you see are super predictable, or they're not predictable, but then they're not good either. You know, they're just kind of... I think this is part of what has turned me off to movies in a big way, is just, like, the sameness and predictability. You know, like, I think that, okay, I read a good article on Lit Reactor. I keep pimping this, you know, but whatever. You should go there. You should read my stuff, you guys. It was talking about the difference between the old and the new Ghostbusters, which was like saying the new Ghostbusters was mostly a vehicle for jokes. The old Ghostbusters was kind of a movie that didn't know what it really was. And I think that made it sort of unpredictable and weird. And, you know, a vehicle for jokes. And, you know, being a remake, you kind of know the beats. And you kind of know... I mean, I haven't seen it. Do I think Leslie Jones is going to be, like, killed by a ghost? No. You know, do I think that there's going to be this building of a, you know, some kind of ghostly presence that they have to have an ultimate large battle in at the end? Yes. Right? Do I think they'll be triumphant? Yes. Do I think there'll be some kind of love story or sadness or something in there somewhere? Probably. But, you know, and this isn't necessarily a slam. I'm not, because I haven't even seen the movie. But it's just to talk about the predictability of things, and especially when they're a remake, right? But Sausage Party was, like, the ultimate predictable movie. You're like, well, I can kind of see where this is going. And also, it's predictable in the way where you don't actually care. Because you're like, I don't know, it's a fucking hot dog. I mean, if it doesn't get eaten, doesn't it just rot? And then whatever? Maybe that's the problem? Anyway, we walked out. We had another movie walk out. That was like an hour-long story of how I walked. The story I just told you was about as long as the portion of the movie I saw. But I think it was better. I think it was more concise and direct, if you can fucking believe that. Less meandering. If I'm calling this show less meandering than something, then that something has a big fucking problem. I do not recommend Sausage Party. Maybe if you're at home and you're like, you know, drunk and whatever, hey, you put it on and fall asleep to it. But, you know, just get a copy of Beetlejuice, okay? That's the movie you fall asleep to drunk. Or Escape from L.A. I don't care what Poon Master Flex says about that. She's objectively wrong. I say it's hard to be objectively wrong about art, but she is objectively wrong. I still care for her very much. And, it didn't actually upset me at all, which was a great feeling. It was great to feel like this person doesn't like something that I like and doesn't share an opinion with me on something, and it does not matter. And, you know, I still care about this person. But, you know, I did not feel the need to defend a major movie. Okay. That's more than enough, right? More than enough recommendation. If you're going to see a movie, see Escape from L.A. before you see Sausage Party. I think Poon Master Flex would agree with that even. I offered, I was like, do you want to watch a third movie tonight that you don't want to see? Or should we just keep this ball rolling? But yeah, I think that would be the ranks. My rank is Escape from L.A., then Sausage Party, then nothing. No, Escape from L.A., nothing, then Sausage Party. And I think Poon Master Flex would be nothing, Escape from L.A., Sausage Party. I'll confirm that with her. And remind me to look up whatever I was wondering about much earlier in the show. There was something I was like, I wonder about da-da-da-da. Remind me to look that up and find out. All right, see you next time.
You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time, let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone dogs and are they in harmony?